so I needed to jump maybe another half hour. I did so, going down to the entrance the deceivers had used to penetrate the palace. I had seen these murders before because I'd been curious how men so alert could be taken by surprise. The first couple of deceivers came disguised as temple prostitutes, fulfilling their obligations to their goddess. It had not occurred to the guards to turn the ladies down. That would have been sacrilegious. This was before I became involved. I jumped upstairs, to the apartment, where my mother-in-law and Sari were doing housework, concluding the day. Uncle Doge and Toad Town were asleep already. Tidae was not, probably because he was waiting for me to return from a job where he'd not been welcome. He had his eyes closed and seemed to be trying to shut out his mother's carping two rooms away. How Sari managed, I don't know. Particularly when I was the object of this diatribe. Mother Gota was more fierce than usual. She wanted to know when Sara was going to abandon this headstrong idiocy, a thousand curses upon the head of Hong Dre, and get herself back to the swamps where she belonged. There was still a chance she could marry, though certainly not well, seeing as she was past her best years and she'd allowed herself to be defiled by a foreigner. Sari took it with such calm, I knew she was accustomed to it, and didn't let her emotions be touched. She went about her business as though her mother was not speaking at all. Soon they finished what they were about. Sara went to our room, without so much as a good night, which only irritated her mother more. I always knew Mother Gota didn't approve of me and suspected she talked behind my back, but I never guessed it had gotten that virulent. The sound of it told me the only reason Mother Gota had come to Taglios was to get her daughter back home. I was aware that she'd broken some tribal taboos in coming to me, but I had misjudged the true depth of feeling of the Nuang Bao toward outsiders. The apartment became very quiet. Totan and Uncle Doge were snoring. Sari fell asleep almost instantly. Mother Gota was too busy complaining to turn in immediately. She didn't need an audience, apparently. I was there hovering when the apartment door opened and the first strangler slipped inside. He was a black Rommel man, an assassin who'd killed many times. One after another, a whole troop followed him in. They believed they were going to attack Croker, the liberator. The last reliable intelligence they had from inside the palace had Croker living in this apartment. He had turned it over to me little more than a week before. The results were unfortunate for everyone but the old man. Moments after they entered, they were aware that there were several people in the apartment. They whispered too softly to be heard. Fingers pointed. They split into four teams, three of three men each, while another half dozen stayed in the main room, just inside the hall door. Totan, Tidae, and Uncle Doge were nearest that room. Totan was nearest of all. Then Uncle Doge. Then Tidae. Totan never had a chance. He never woke up. But Tidae was not asleep yet, and Uncle Doge must have had a guardian angel. He popped up as the strangler team hit him. The arm holders, whose task it was to keep the victim from defending himself, while the senior strangler got his rumble around his neck and finished him, weren't strong enough for their task. He threw them off, then dropped the master strangler with a violent smash from an elbow. Before the other two could get back at him, he reached Ashwand. Tidae came to his feet as the door to his room swung inward. The arm holders hit him as he headed for his swords, flinging him violently across the room, but not before he got hold of his short sword. Tidae shouted warnings as he lashed out. The stranglers waiting in the main room stormed back to help their brothers. By the time they arrived, Mother Gota was up and flailing around with a sword, and Sara, who had no weapon whatsoever, and no way out of our room except through the melee, was trying to find some way to block the entrance. I studied the next 2 minutes over and over. During them, a dozen people died, all of them deceivers. Tidae managed to get his arm broken. Uncle Doge chased survivors into the hall. It did not happen the way I'd been told, but it was close enough, to that point. But afterward, no bad guys got in behind Doge and murdered Sara. Sara was in bad shape, but she was alive. When Doge returned from the chase, Mother Goda suggested she be given something to calm her down. Uncle Doge agreed. In minutes, Sara was out, in the bed where I would see her shortly. I had to go away for a while. I would be arriving any minute. I came back when I knew I would be out cold, having drunk something offered me by Uncle Doge while I lay down with my beloved. I watched them take Sari and Totan away. Uncle Doge, Taidei, and various relatives, as Mother Goda would tell me after I awakened, carrying their bodies off for proper funerals at home. I managed a fair amount of anger out there, despite the emotion-deadening environment. I followed the party off to Nguyenbao land. There were other bodies, too. The Strangler raid had taken the lives of several Nguyenbao bodyguards. Surprise, surprise. Sari came back to life before the party ever cleared the city. She acted just about the same as I had on awakening and finding her gone. "What's happening?" she demanded. "Why are we here?" She directed her questions to Uncle Doge, but Doge did not respond except to make a gesture toward Taidei, who was distracted by the pain of his broken arm. Taidei mumbled, "We are taking you home, Sari. There is no longer any reason for you to remain in this evil city."
"What? You can't do this. Take me back to Mergen."
Taidei stared down at the cobblestones.
"Mergen is dead, Sari. The Tuga killed him."
"No."
"I'm sorry, Sara," Uncle Doge said.
"Many Tuga paid with their lives, but it was a price they were willing to pay. Many of our people died too, and where they failed or they were not present, many of the others perished as well."
The word he used as others was Nguyenbao for anyone who wasn't Nguyenbao.
"He can't be dead,"
Sari cried. She for sure had the wail of grief down pat.
"He can't die without seeing his child."
Uncle Doge stopped dead in his tracks, as numb as a pole-axed steer. Taidei stared at his sister and began making a whimpering sound. Since I was getting used to Nguyenbao ways, I assumed he was distraught because it would be impossible for him to marry off a sister who carried the child of an outsider. Uncle Doge muttered,
"I am beginning to believe your mother is wiser than we thought, Taidei. She blamed all this on Hong Trey. Now it begins to look like your grandmother was entirely too clever, or we just misunderstood. Her prophecy may have included Mergen only indirectly. It might be about the child Sara is carrying."
I understood that the woman in the swamp, twice seen already, must be Sari herself.
"There will be no place for Sara then," Taidei said, pain obvious. "If she bears an outsider's bastard."
"Take me back," Sara said.
"If you won't let me be, I will be Nguyenbao no longer. I will go to my husband's people. There will be a place for me with the Black Company."
This was social heresy of an order so high that both Taidei and Uncle Doge were stricken speechless. I don't believe I would have been speechless had I been able to get at those two right then. I lifted away. I'd heard enough to know where I stood, where Sari stood, and where my faithful companion Taidei stood. The old man might not be right about the Nguyenbao, but he was for sure not wrong. I skipped forward in time rapidly, tracking Sari. Taidei and Uncle Doge took her to the temple where I'd spotted her before. They left her in the hands of a great uncle who was a priest. Sara was, in essence, now an orphan, though she was a grown woman twice married. The temple was where Nguyenbao without family went. The temple became home. The priests and nuns became family. In return, the orphan was expected to dedicate his or her life to good works and whatever deities the Nguyenbao worshipped. Nobody ever set me straight on that, though the temple where they stashed Sara boasted several idols that looked a lot like various Guni gods. Shadar have only one god of sufficient magnitude to warrant an idol, and Vedna doctrine prescribes any graven images at all. I focused in on Sari as she was today. I followed her about her duties for an hour. She was helping keep the temple clean, carrying water, helping with cooking, pretty much exactly what she would have done had she been living in one of the hamlets with a Nguyenbao husband. But the people of the temple shunned her. No one spoke to her except the priest to whom she was related. Nothing needed to be said. She'd defiled herself. Her only visitor was an elderly gentleman named Bando Trung, a commercial factor whose friendship Sara had won during the siege of Dejigori. Bon had been the interlocutor between us the last time Sara's family had tried to keep us apart. He'd made it possible for Sara to slip away and reach me before she could be stopped. Bon understood. Bon had loved a Guni woman when he was young. He spent most of his time trading in the outside world. He didn't think everything other was purely evil. Bon was good people. I searched hard and picked my moment carefully when Sara was at her afternoon prayer. I brought my point of view down in front of her, right at eye level. I exercised all my will. Sorry, I'm here. I love you. They lied to you. I'm not dead. Sari made a little sound like a puppy whimpering. For an instant she seemed to stare right into my eyes. She seemed to see me. Then she bounced up and fled the room terrified. Chapter 41. One eye just kept slapping me till I came out of it.
God damn, you little shit, quit it!
My face was sore. How long had he been pounding me?
I'm here! What the fuck's your problem? You're doing a lot of yelling, kid. And if you were talking any language your in-laws could understand, you'd be up shit creek. Come on! Get it under control!
I got it under control. You have to learn to manage emotion if you're going to survive in our racket. But my heart continued to pound and my mind to race. I shook like I had a bad ague. One eye offered me a large cup of water. I drained it. He said, "It's partly my fault." I wandered off.
I didn't think you'd stay out that long.
Thought you'd figure it out and get your ass back to see what we plan to do about it. I croaked,
"What you plan to do about it? Don't got no plans."
I think the old man was just gonna let it slide and keep his eyes open till he decided you needed to know.
He wasn't going to tell me.
One eye shrugged, which meant probably not. Croker was no more enthralled by my marriage than were Sara's people. The bastard. I need to see him.
He'll want to see you. When you've got yourself under control.
I grunted.
You let me know when you can get by without a lot of screaming and carrying on.
I can do that right now, you little shit. What did you guys mean, not letting me?
You let me know when you can get by without a lot of screaming and carrying on.
You little shit. I was running out of venom. I'd been out there a long time. I needed to eat. I had a feeling I wouldn't be allowed a snack till after my interview with Croker.
You ready to talk? Croker asked. Done with screaming and carrying on? You guys spend the whole time I was ghost walking rehearsing your act?
So, what are your in-laws up to, Mergen?
I don't have the faintest fucking idea, but I'm thinking maybe I want to put Uncle Doge's feet in the fire and ask. Croker was drinking tea. Taglians are big tea drinkers. The Shadowlanders of these parts were bigger tea people. He took a sip.
You want some?
Yeah. I needed liquids.
Think about this.
We put him to the question on account of you suddenly know they fucked you over. You think anybody, Nguyen Bao or otherwise, might wonder how you suddenly knew when you're only like 800 miles from the evidence?
I don't care.
Exactly. You're not thinking about anything but you. But anything you do is going to touch every member of the company. It might touch every man who came over those mountains with us. It might change the course of this war. I wanted to belittle his claims because I was hurting bad and very much wanted to do some hurting of my own. I couldn't. Time enough had passed for reason to begin rearing its reasonable head. I bit down on the words that rose in my throat. I drank my tea. I thought. I said,
"You're right.
So, what do we do?" Croker poured me some more tea.
I don't think we do anything. I think we go
right on the way we've been. I think we do the trapdoor spider thing. I think only three guys know what an incredible tool we've got, and nobody else needs to know. I grunted. I drank some tea. I said, she thinks I'm dead. She's living her whole life based on that lie. Croker fiddled with his fire. He looked into his bag of liberated tea. One eye finally caught on.
Oh, yeah. I figured you was familiar with that book of the annals that was written by the captain's woman.
He showed me a sneer with a couple of teeth missing. Right. You just keep on being reasonable. See if I care, shithead.
I got a great idea, kid. Come on back to the wagon with me. Something I found the other day you might be interested in.
Croker said, you guys don't wander too far. We're getting enough people in here now. It's time to start harassing Long Shadow.
Of course,
One Eye said. He ducked out the door flap, grumbling, just can't leave shit alone. I ducked out behind him. He didn't stop.
We could sit out here for the next 100 years and not hurt nobody. Set up our own damned kingdom. Starve the son of a bitch out, but no. We got to do some kind of...
One Eye glanced back. We were out of earshot of the old man. Enough of that shit.
You dickhead. You never told me about Goblin.
What's to tell?
You knew what he was all along, didn't you? He wasn't dead or nothing. You got around the commands Croker laid on Smoke and found the worthless little shit.
I didn't say anything. Goblin was still out there on his own somewhere, presumably continuing his mission, presumably still needing secrecy.
Ha! I was right. You never could lie for shit. Where is he, kid? I got a right to know.
I started to back away. It might be time to take my act elsewhere. You're wrong. I don't know where he is. I don't know if he's even still alive. Which was true.
What you mean you don't know?
I got a speech impediment. You've had Smoke all month, remember? You. The short shit who was loafing around up there in those hills while I was down here dodging shadows and Shadowlander ambushes.
Now I know you're shitting me. There ain't been one shadow seen since the night we broke the mat. Bullshit. You're feeding me bullshit.
Yeah, I guess I forgot the first rule.
Huh? What's that?
Never confuse you with facts.
You smart ass. I hung on in this world 200 years so I could put up with this shit.
He jumped up on the tongue of his wagon and leaned inside. I began to put a little more distance between us. He dug around in some rags behind his driver's seat. He glanced over his shoulder, saw me moving.
You just hang on right there, you peckerhead.
He jumped down, started waving his arms around while he went to squeaking and squealing in one of those languages wizards use so the rest of us will think there's something terribly strange and mystical about what they do. Kind of like lawyers. One Eye sometimes flew off into unprovoked fits of lawyerism, too. Blue sparks began to crackle between the tips of his fingers. His lips stretched into an evil grin. I wouldn't give him Goblin, so I would have to take Goblin's place. Damn, I wished Goblin would come back.
What's this?
I whirled. The captain had followed us. One Eye gulped air. I scooted a few fast steps, which brought the old man into the field of fire, too. One Eye shoved his hands into his pockets to hide them.
Ouch!
He said with sudden, quiet fervor. The sparks hadn't stopped. Croker asked me, he been drinking again? I don't know when, unless it was before he got me up. But he's acting like it.
Who? Me?
One Eye squeaked.
Not me. No way. I don't touch the stuff anymore.
I observed. He hasn't had time to get set up. That means jack shit. There's any to be stolen, he'll find that. You know anyone else who'd suddenly start a fight for no good reason?
Ain't nobody in this outfit like that,
One Eye insisted.
Unless you count Goblin. Sometimes he in this outfit anymore, Captain?
Croker ignored him. He asked me, you planning to take Smoke back out now? No, that hadn't occurred to me, food had. Croker grunted. I need to talk to my staff wizard here. One Eye. I moved out. What now? That food. I ate till the cooks began to grumble about some folks thinking they were special. After I finished, I strolled across the snowy slopes, trying to calm the storm inside me. The sky promised more snow. We'd been lucky so far, I suspected. None of the snows had been heavy, and none had stuck long. I spied Tai Day and his mother, the latter offering a piece of her mind. Still, it kept them at a distance. I glimpsed Swan and Blade, far off, trotting somewhere in a big hurry. That meant Lady had come in, or at least would arrive soon. Her advance force had a camp under construction. South, beyond Kialune, a spear of sunlight broke through the overcast, struck Overlook. The whole vast fortress gleamed like some religion's notion of heaven. I needed to take Smoke over there and get caught up, but not right away. One Eye and the old man still had their heads together, maybe talking about me. I strolled downhill toward where Lady's soldiers were building their camp. I wondered how Lady and Blade were getting along. He'd been her main helper before his defection. He had not let her know what was happening when he did that. I could not see her forgiving him the deceit, however successful its end result. Crows fluttered over the camp. Maybe Lady was there. Croker was right. We had to be paranoid. All the time. If it wasn't the Shadow Master's spying, it would be Soulcatcher, or the Deceivers, or the Howler. Or Kina herself. Or the Yuang Bao. Or the Radisha's agents. Or spies for the priests. Or... Chapter 42. Lady had come in without me being told. I had no trouble getting in to see her. That made me wonder if it was going to be easy to get out. She had questions of her own. What are we doing now, Mergen? What's his game this time? I halted one step into the presence, mouth open. There'd been changes since last I saw her. This was not the lady with whom I had ridden south. This was not the woman who'd seemed so haunted in front of the Danda Presh. This creature was the lady of olden times, resurrected, a being of such terrible power, it had trouble constraining itself in a presentable form. What the hell happened? Mergen!
What?
I squeaked. I reminded myself that I was the analyst. The analyst is fearless. He stands aside from squabbles within the company. He isn't intimidated by his brothers. He records the truth. She scared me anyway. I want to know. Anything you want to know, you'd better ask the old man. I couldn't tell you, even if I was as goofy as Willow Swan. He don't tell me anything either. He's still keeping it all inside his head. You seen that place over there? Worse than the Tower at Charm. He hasn't paid any attention to it since we got here. I haven't seen him do much of anything. Long Shadow and Howler haven't done much either, though. It's frustrating. Yeah, and maybe not even very smart, considering what shape we'd be in if the Stranglers got him.
Less likely than you think.
Because of Soulcatcher?
Yes.
She can't be everywhere any more than you can. And they call them the Deceivers for a reason. I hoped my voice was not squeaking. I was trying to play the fearless man.
None of that is why you wanted to see me.
No. I've got a problem. My dreams are getting worse. They're really bad now. I want to know how to shut them out.
I haven't found a way.
You have to learn to remember what they are.
Has Kina been calling you?
I don't think so. It's more like she's passing through my dreams and doesn't notice me if I lie real still. Or maybe I'm eavesdropping on someone else's nightmares.
Tell me about them.
I told her.
Those are pretty much the dreams I've always had. Mostly I'm on the plane anymore.
Are there crows there?
Crows? No. There isn't anything alive there.
I considered. Actually, what I said before isn't quite true. She does seem to be aware of me, specifically. The other night, I got led through a version of the plane dream where I saw my wife. I talked to Sari. The implication was there that I could get her back.
That's new. For me, the horrors just get worse. I think they're supposed to overwhelm me eventually.
I had a feeling she wasn't telling the whole truth either. I said, I find it hard to believe that she could feed me anything worse than what I've seen in real life. Knowing what she's trying to do,
she managed to use me, Mergen. Because I thought I knew what she was doing. But I didn't. She is the queen of deceivers.
I wasn't her daughter of night at all. I was just a brood mare who was going to carry a deceiver messiah for her.
Don't make the mistake I made. If she really has noticed you, you be very, very careful. And keep me posted. I grunted.
Did you keep track of times when you thought you sensed Kina?
I had. But most of the time she came near me, I was out with smoke.
Not very well.
I gave her a couple of times that seemed harmless.
That isn't much help. Control your emotions. Your wife would be an obvious way to manipulate you. You have any idea why?
I guess the standard.
Of course. Hints pile up, but we never get the story.
The Lance of Passion.
Only the thing's never shown any special properties. It had, but in a time and manner I couldn't explain, without exposing smoke. Croker stuck Howler with it once, just a flesh wound, but the little wizard almost died. Maybe we don't really have the lance. People might just think we do.
She murmured, "Is this another complicated deceit?" I asked, "How do I stop the dreaming?"
"Weren't you listening?"
"You don't."
"I don't think I'm strong enough just to live with them." "You learn."
Mine went away after the baby was born, but not for long. I think Kina forgot to sever the connection.
Maybe Narayan was supposed to do that when he took your daughter.
Of course he was.
I didn't mean to remind you of...
I don't need reminding, I remember just fine. Every minute of every hour, and someday soon, I plan to discuss it with Narayan, up close and personal.
When she said that, she seemed as nasty as Kina herself, though maybe you had to be there and had to know her history to enjoy the full impact.
He's going to get his Year of the Skulls now. He's run out of places to hide.
You've seen Overlook. You think he needs to hide? Before she answered, Blade shoved his head into the ragged tent. A strangler just took a crack at Willow. Willow's having a little trouble breathing, but he'll be all right.
You take the assassin alive? Lady asked.
I eased toward the exit. Her mood was getting blacker. I did not want her pressing me hard. Blade grinned. He's in perfect health. Though he'd have a heart attack if he could. I began easing around Blade. Lady gave me an eyeball-the-bug look that said she thought we ought to talk more later. I might consider staying out of her way. Maybe I'd been too open with her already.
I stayed at a distance but watched. Lady's interrogation methods were deft, vicious, and effective.
The lesson wasn't lost on any witnesses. Within minutes, the Strangler admitted that he'd infiltrated the camp follower crowd after our victory at Chirandaprash. The order had come from Narayan Singh himself. Willow Swan had been his primary target. Other Red Rummel men had been assigned other targets. They too had concealed themselves among the camp followers. They'd been directed by the Daughter of Night herself to be very careful executing their missions. The children of Kina had become so few that part of their obligation to their goddess now was to preserve themselves for her sake. Lady knew just how to charm a man into talking. One of those things you learn when you're around forever, I suppose. One of those things people like Longshadow would like to mine out of your head. She was so effective, the Strangler abandoned hope of his eternal reward to tell her names. I took a walk as Blade began organizing a throat-cutting expedition. Just to underscore her disaffection with them, Lady strangled one of the deceivers herself. She used her own black scarf, taken from a black Rummel man years ago. Every deceiver knew the tale. She sent her messages thus. Crows took off in multitudes. By way of conversation with Narayan Singh, Lady had the heads of the deceivers put on lances and carried across to Overlook. Croker joined me. "That's my sweetie," he said, shaking his head. Like he would have been kinder had he gotten to those men first. He knew what I was thinking. A lady doesn't murder people in polite company. He grinned. What polite company? The company ain't polite. And I think it was a very ladylike thing she did.
Yeah.
He seemed almost cheerful about it all. Chapter 43. I spent a good many hours at it, but I finally located Sleepy with some base camp elements from Big Bucket's Special Forces Battalion. Bucket's gang was doing the biggest part of the work of hunting Mugabe's partisans. I told the kid, "Let's go for a walk. I need to talk to you." I collected a handful of flat stones to throw at crows if those squawking nightmares got too curious.
"This about what I hope it is?"
The boy was excited. I couldn't remember having been excited about becoming the standard bearer, but I'd gotten the job by default. There'd been no one else able to do it. It had had to be handled. "Partly. I got the final word from the old man. He says you're all right with him. He's leaving the choice up to me. So, you're in, far as I'm concerned. But he wants me to handle the standard myself till after we know, one way or the other, how it's going to go with Long Shadow. We can start teaching you some stuff right away, and see that you get out of some of the more unpleasant duties, so you'll have time. Especially for working on your reading and writing." The boy beamed. I felt a little shitty. "But there's one special job I need you to do first." I saw Big Bucket headed our way, probably to hand the kid one of the very jobs I had just mentioned.
"What? I can handle it."
"Absolutely." Which was why Bucket would pick him out of the crowd. "I've got a secret message that needs to get to Taglios. It's critical. You can take a few guys with you just in case. Use guys who can ride hard. I'll give you authorization to use courier remounts." I raised a hand to forestall anything Bucket had to say. This has to go through as fast as it can. Bucket had heard some of it.
"You're taking away my best man to carry a letter?"
"Yes, because it has to get through."
"This really serious?"
Bucket asked. "That's why I have him out here where nobody can hear us."
"Then I'd better go away."
For a fugitive thief, Bucket made a very good soldier.
"Probably." "Hate to lose you, kid."
Bucket shuffled off to dump whatever it was on somebody else. Sleepy said, "If you loan me your horse, I won't have to take anybody with me, and I'll get there and back a lot faster." He had a point. He had a marvelous point, and it hadn't occurred to me. "Let me think about this." There was an iffy side. The old man might want me to do something before Sleepy got back. If I didn't have my horse, he would ask questions. I wasn't planning to share my plan with the captain. If I did, he would forbid it.
"I'll be back in less than a month."
With my horse, he could manage that, if he had a butt of iron. He was young and hardy, but I didn't think anybody was that tough. Still, nothing was likely to happen around here for at least that long. It would take more than a month for all the stragglers to come in, for our leaders to hash out some kind of plan. It wasn't possible that Croker had a plan worked out for Overlook the way he'd had for Chirandaprash. I wasn't likely to get caught. And once the kid had a week's head start, even Soulcatcher wouldn't be able to intercept him. "All right, we'll do it your way. One thing, though. The message has to be put into the hands of a specific person. He might not be available right away. You might have to wait for him."
"I'll do whatever the job calls for, Mergen."
"All right. Come down to my..." I couldn't do that. Tide was sure to overhear something. "No, first, I have to tell you who to find." I glanced around. Sleepy was one of the few veterans of Digigore who hadn't acquired a Nguyen Bao bodyguard, but the Nguyen Bao as a group did keep an eye on him.
"I'm listening."
The kid was eager to prove himself. "His name is Ban Do Tran. He was a friend of my wife's. He's a trading factor who goes back and forth between Taglios and the Delta. He sells everything, from rice to crocodile skins. He's old and slow, but he's the only way to get a message into the swamp.
You have a whole family.
You might have noticed how little the captain trusts those people.
Yes.
There's good reason not to trust them. Any of them who are here with us. In this case, any of them but Bondo Trong himself.
I understand. Where do I find this man?
I gave him directions. You can tell him who the message is from, but only if he asks. He should deliver it to Kisara at the Vin Gao Gong Temple of Gangesha.
You want me to wait for an answer?
That won't be necessary. If the message got through, I would get my answer directly from Sari. I'm going to go write several copies of the message. You do what you think is best to make sure one of them survives the whole journey.
I understand.
Though he had not reacted to Sara's formal name, I suspected that he understood more than I was telling. Later, I introduced Sleepy to my horse and made the stallion understand that it was time to earn his oats. The animal was smart enough to be as disgruntled as any soldier asked to get up and bust his butt. The kid slipped away without anybody but Bucket knowing that he was going. Chapter 44. The Shadow Master was in his crystal tower, immersed in some arcane experiment. He was seeing no one. The stinking ragbag that contained the Howler was perched atop some of the highest scaffolding surrounding Overlook. Work had resumed, though at a snail's pace. Long Shadow wouldn't quit just because an army was nearby. The sky was heavily overcast. A chill breeze whined through the scaffolding. Unpleasant weather was headed our way.
"You sent for me,"
Singh sounded offended. He was cold for certain.
"It was not a summons, friend Narayan,"
Howler replied. The deceiver's approach had been impressively discreet. Easy to see how he'd become a master strangler.
"An invitation only. Perhaps my messenger failed to relay my exact words."
A crow whipped past. Another settled nearby. It pecked at crumbs left scattered where workmen had paused to eat. Singh ignored them. There had been crows everywhere since the earthquake. Times were good for the blackbirds.
Howler said, "It occurred to me that you might be interested in what's been happening outside. I believe Lady has sent you a personal message."
Singh stared down at the array of severed heads indicated by Howler. Undaunted by the presence of workmen, Taglian cavalrymen had set up their trophies close enough for their faces to be recognized. Narayan counted heads. His skinny shoulders slumped. Howler's stance became subtly mocking.
"I was right. It is a message. A prophecy. She's trying to foretell my future. She does these things. I worked for her, and her husband before her. This is nothing!"
Howler tried and failed to stifle a shriek.
"Seems to me Kina hasn't taken good care of our children lately."
Singh didn't argue.
"How will you bring on the Year of the Skulls now? How many of your freak brothers are left? You risk more than you know when you mock the goddess." "I doubt it."
Howler controlled another rising scream. Like a man choking down a persistent cough, he could manage for short times.
"In any case, I don't think I'm going to stay around to find out. Long Shadow is too damned crazy to do what he has to do. I refuse to be dragged down with him."
He eyed Singh sidelong, watching for a reaction. Narayan smiled as though privy to a huge and ugly secret.
"You fear Lady. You cannot control your functions when you think of her."
Me, Mergen, ectoplasmic spy, sat on the runt's shoulder and wondered if these two would be kind enough to take it a little further and give me something I could use. Howler had something on his mind. Singh started to leave. It was obvious that those heads out there did little to sustain his faith. Unlike his spooky ward, he did not enjoy visitations from his goddess. Neither she nor the Daughter of Night had bothered providing explanations for the countless disasters befalling his brethren. Howler read his mood perfectly.
"Makes you wonder about the divine order, doesn't it?"
he screamed before Singh could respond. He'd lost control because he was startled. I was startled, too. Swarms of those colored balls from the bamboo poles hurtled toward Overlook. They ripped into workmen and scaffolding and splashed against the wall. They gnawed at men and material, and even stained the ramparts wherever Long Shadow's spells weren't yet sufficiently dense. Workmen shrieked and fled. Some scaffolding collapsed. A band of Taglian horsemen appeared out of a ravine, chased the workmen toward their makeshift housing. I raised my point of view as the horsemen withdrew across the rocky ground. I spied Taglian infantrymen crawling forward everywhere. Large numbers were stealing into the laborer's housing complex from its blind side. Many wore clothing similar to that worn by the locals. What the hell? These were ladies' troops, I was sure. What was she up to? And why did the old man keep it from me? Or was he unaware, too? The workmen turned back, chased by the soldiers they found in the housing complex, their families fleeing with them in a wild tangle of panic and confusion. I got a glimmering then. They clambered up the surviving scaffolding and took shelter inside Overlook, and a whole bunch of ladies' men climbed right with them. Fireballs continued to splash away against the walls and towers. Whole batteries seemed particularly interested in the tower surmounted by Long Shadow's crystal chamber. In some places, bits of wall wisped or melted away. In most areas, and especially so everywhere Long Shadow had the habit of going, the protective spells were already too well established for the fireballs even to cause discolorations. Howler didn't understand exactly what was happening. From his angle of view, he couldn't see the nature of the attack. He just saw his associate subjects running for their lives.
"Forbidden," he muttered. "Forbidden, forbidden, forbidden. Long Shadow is going to shit rocks. I hope he doesn't get any ideas about having me punishing these people."
"You're so mighty a sorcerer," Narayan Singh said. "Why don't you hit back?"
"That's the point," Howler said,
seeing the possibility Lady wanted him to see.
"It's a trap. Somewhere down there are whole battalions with those devices that throw fireballs. They're waiting for me, or Long Shadow, to counterattack."
I took a quick swoop across the countryside. Howler was right. There was a guy behind every bush and rock with a bundle of bamboo poles. Few were contributing to the continuous barrage. Yet. And what was Lady doing? When I returned, Howler had gotten down out of sight. Narayan crouched. Neither seemed anxious to move.
Howler said, "I'm not staying much longer, Singh. If I was you, right now, I'd be doing some serious thinking about how I could wake up an ally who's completely lost his grip on reality. That, or I'd think about finding friends who could do me more good."
I pricked up my ghostly ears. At the same time, I turned slowly, using my ghostly eyes. We had several hundred of our men inside Overlook now, and neither Howler nor Long Shadow realized it. I wondered if the old man knew. I think he would have hinted something so I could watch for a particular reaction.
Narayan asked, "You have a suggestion?"
Howler fought through one of his shrieks.
"Perhaps."
Pretty lights filled the air around me. I almost let myself be distracted. But I managed to hang in there, listening.
Singh asked, "What do you mean?" "Long Shadow is clever, but he's no major intellect. Back when the Shadow Masters took control of the shadows they used to conquer their empire, before they understood the darkness they were tapping, they messed up royally. They broke some seals permanently instead of cracking them temporarily. You get in a hurry, you screw up. To keep things from going completely rotten, they had to have somebody watching the Shadow Gate all the time. Long Shadow volunteered for the job. The others thought that would keep Long Shadow out of trouble because he wouldn't be able to travel. They already knew he was a lunatic, but he was more cunning than they thought. He wove a skein of spells that keeps the Shadow Gate closed to everybody but him. His true name is part of the spell complex. That's probably the biggest risk he's ever taken, and one he's regretted from the instant he cemented it in place and discovered the price he'd paid for power. The shadows know his name. Every one he lets wriggle through that gate so he can use it wants to devour him. The price he pays is eternal vigilance. If he slips, he dies.
Howler let loose a shriek, pregnant with passion as well as pain. Narayan Singh sensed the difference.
What is it?
He asked.
It was a stupid thing he did. For power. If he dies and his name fades, the clamping spells unravel and the Shadow Gate opens. And that means the end of the world.
Do they know that out there? Singh asked, indicating the besieging army, some of whom continued to sneak up the scaffolding unnoticed because that was considered impossible.
Probably not, though Lady might reason it out.
Sneer. We knew it now. Narayan pondered for a moment, then said,
If all that is true, then I think you cannot leave Overlook. Without your aid, I fear the Black Company will triumph, whatever he believes. In which case, doom will find you wherever you run.
Howler shrieked, angry, despairing, seeing the logic of Singh's observation.
He is not competent to lead, yet we cannot wrest command from him.
That would do no good, would it? We are slaves of his strategy now. And that requires completion of the fortress,
which no longer seemed likely. If many more of Lady's soldiers got inside, Long Shadow's skeleton garrison wouldn't be able to overcome them. Narayan continued,
Maybe the general will have an idea.
Both sides knew Mogaba was alive and directing the partisans. I'd had no luck finding him. I'd had an equal lack of success tracing Goblin. Smoke was a handy tool, but you had to have some reference points when you started. That, or an age to go back and forth in tiny jumps, so people working hard not to be found could be caught in each of their tricks.
We'd have to find him.
Good luck, guys.
There are ways, Narayan said. The Daughter of Night has eyes that can see from afar, and you are correct when you say that something has to be done.
Howler agreed. I agreed with everybody. Taglian soldiers continued to reach the top of the wall. Most were surprised to have made it. Few had any definite objective once they reached the top. Again, I wondered if the old man knew what was going on. I started to drift away, thinking maybe it was time to see Croker. The Daughter of Night came to the top of the wall, galloped toward Howler and Singh as fast as her short legs would carry her. Fireballs scarred Overlook's wall. There appeared to be a purpose to the way they fell, but I couldn't discern it. More and more soldiers climbed the scaffolding. The child shrieked at Singh and Howler. Then Howler shrieked. The news was out. Chapter 45. I tumbled out of the wagon. After a couple of steps, I fell to my knees.
Whoa there, One Eye said. What's up?
Spent too long out, maybe. Weak. Hungry and thirsty. I took water from him. It had been sweetened, but included nasty additives as well. He must be making something that would turn alcoholic.
Where's the old man? I don't know. I see Tai Day, though.
By way of suggesting caution. I shifted languages.
Lady isn't playing with them over there. She had troops climb the scaffolding. They made it to the top. There's a mob of them inside. They've just found out on the inside. And some of the prince's men are in the ruins of Kialune. They were sneaking up to help Lady, but they got bogged down. There are actually people hiding out there now. Some of Mogaba's bunch. They're putting up a fight.
I'd passed over the ruins coming back and had been surprised to see the fighting. The presence of fighters there needed examination. It hadn't been long since the ruins were occupied by only a handful of survivors incapable of helping Long Shadow with his construction project. Mogaba had to be sneaking men in a few at a time. I think Croker went off with one of the patrols looking for Mogaba.
What do you need him for?
I don't think he knows what's happening. I think Lady did this on her own. Which had been fine when she was in charge of the frontier, but not now, when she commanded only a quarter of the army. I have no idea what his plans are, but I'll bet he don't want them taken away from him like this. One Eye grunted. He considered Tai Day and Mother Gota, who was a dozen yards farther away, closing in, bent under a huge load of firewood. Give her credit. She carried her share of the work. One Eye's own bodyguard, Jojo, was nowhere to be seen, which was the usual state of affairs. They were two of a kind. One Eye said,
I'll jump in the wagon and find out. You get your strength back.
He went up with a frown, tossing one concerned glance back before he disappeared. I helped Mother Gota with the firewood. So did Tai Day. We got it sorted and broken and in out of the wet in minutes. Mother Gota actually thanked me for helping. She had moments when she could manage courtesy toward an outsider who hadn't been able to help his bad choice of parents. Those were rare. They seemed to come only when she was feeling particularly good. I remained courteous myself. In fact, now that I knew what they'd done to me in Sari, I found myself becoming more formal and courteous. I hoped my manners didn't make them suspicious. I smirked when I thought about Sleepy. Then I worried about the kid. I had no business burdening him with a personal mission like that. I started pacing, wondering if I ought to confess to One Eye or the old man. One Eye descended from his wagon. He looked like he'd seen a ghost, or something equally unexpected and unpleasant. I headed his way.
What's up? I don't know. I don't have time to find out.
He sort of sighed his words.
Tell me. I found Croker.
All right. So where is he? So what's the problem?
He's out there talking to the Keeper of the Crows. Catcher. He went out to meet Soul Catcher? I didn't track him back. I don't know if that was his plan. But that's where he's at. That's what he's doing.
Did he look like he was a prisoner again? I didn't wait for an answer. I piled into the wagon. Silly me, I didn't ask One Eye where Croker was, so I ended up having to track him from his quarters to his meeting with the madwoman. He did go specifically to meet her. That I determined by taking smoke in so close that I could hear Croker's twin crows squawk instructions. The trouble I did have was after I trailed him through the wilds to his rendezvous inside a snowbound, rocky ravine that was almost invisible beneath overhanging pines. I didn't get close enough to hear what was said. It was a miracle that I got smoke as close as I did, to assure myself that the old man did indeed have a date with Soul Catcher. The crows were thick there, and they sensed me hovering. They became so agitated that Catcher came out to find out what was going on. I got out of there. I wondered if Croker would suspect anything. I came back out. Thoughtful One Eye had a bucket of warm tea ready, along with some fresh bread from a nearby regimental bakery that was just getting started. I asked, You get close enough to hear anything?
Can't push that little shit anywhere near her. He's 3/4 dead, but he's still 5/4 chicken shit.
I don't feel like going after him. It'll have to wait. In the meantime. In the meantime, things were happening in Overlook. Flickering lights illuminated the whole region. A dark cloud ribbed with fire boiled up and fell apart in the teeth of the wind. Horns and drums bickered. Fireballs by the thousand pelted the fortress wall. In the meantime, you might want to take a look at that, so you can tell the old man whatever he needs to know when he gets here. Which he's going to be when he realizes that something is happening. Not on sound advice. If Croker was going to make decisions, he was going to need all the information he could get. Keep my loving family away, eh? I couldn't keep bitterness from creeping into my voice. One eye caught it, but he didn't ask. I swallowed one last mouthful of warm bread, settled, grasped smoke, and took him out. The process had become so easy, I could practically do it in my sleep. I hardly had to think about where I wanted to go, as long as that wasn't one of the places Smoke didn't like to visit. Overlook was the proverbial overturned ant's nest. People were running everywhere. It didn't look like anyone knew where they were going. Almost everybody was interested only in not being where they'd started. Occasionally, Taglians came face to face with the Shadowmaster's men, and fear took its inevitable course. Some of the invaders had sense enough to stay up on the wall and use their bamboo poles to make life miserable for folks inside Overlook. One lieutenant screamed his head off at the men outside and below, telling them he wanted more poles up here now. His snipers were having great fun tearing the place up. Overlook's defenders didn't dare show themselves. Some of our men had Narayan Singh and the Daughter of Night cornered in a tower. They pasted it with a blizzard of fireballs. The tower held up only because it was layered with scores of protective spells. It was one of Long Shadow's favorite hideouts. The Howler was on the run. Taglians whooped after him, spraying fireballs around so liberally that the little wizard had no time to counterattack. He screamed as he ran. More and more men, all lugging bundles of bamboo, got into the fortress. It could not possibly be this easy, could it? Where was Long Shadow? He wasn't taking part. The Shadow Master remained in his own high tower, staring south toward the Gray Plateau, apparently unaware that hell had come calling. How could the man be that preoccupied? No, he was not that preoccupied. He did know. Scaffolding all the way around Overlook burst into flames. It was a ferocious fire spell. Flames devoured everything consumable in seconds. Scores fell to their deaths. Before that even happened, ladies' men had begun lowering rope and slat ladders obviously created specifically for scaling Overlook's walls. They were long enough for the climb, and each dozen feet, they boasted a frame box meant to hold them away from the wall so the climb would be easier for the soldiers. Long Shadow couldn't see those from his vantage. It would be a while before he understood that his stroke had gained him very little. Now he was shut up inside, without a hope of completing his fortress, because he could acquire materials for scaffolding only on the outside. Whatever else, Lady had accomplished that much. She'd taken away the one weapon that might have given him an incontestable victory. He couldn't unleash a flood of shadows to cleanse the earth of his enemies because he could not protect himself from the darkness. Lady's soldiers continued entering Overlook, slowly, under the impression they were headed toward victory because the only resistance they encountered, initially, was that of gravity. Their comrades already held the top of the fortress's north wall for the 200 yards between two crystal-topped towers. Both towers were slagged and blackened, the crystal dead from fireball bombardment. To my puzzlement, Lady had teams outside the wall still hammering away with their bamboo poles. I had no hope of figuring anything out. Lady had brought this mess on with less warning than the old man did his surprises. Would we have two of them playing this game now? Actually, I suppose Lady had been playing all along. I just didn't pay attention because she was never in the primary role. The prince's men remained bogged down with the unexpected mob of partisans in Kialune, but now he was routing his men around the skirmishing. It looked like there would be plenty more soldiers to follow Lady's mob up the rope ladders. The fighting inside Overlook was crueler than I thought it could be. The garrison were all veterans who'd been with Long Shadow a long time. They might not love him, but they were dedicated and determined and convinced that the Black Company would show them no mercy whatsoever. They fought like it. In territory they knew well, and their enemies knew not at all. With the help of several clutches of those little old brown men called Skrinsa Shadow Weavers. Shadows did lurk in the fortress. The Shadow Weavers knew where they were hidden and how to send them slithering after invaders. The bamboo poles helped, but not enough to save everybody. The inside of the fortress was all winding hallways and dark rooms, and there was no way to know that a shadow was around till it attacked. I could locate the little old men, but I couldn't tell anyone where they were, so they could be erased from the equation. The deeper the soldiers pushed, the worse it got. Long Shadow wasn't doing much. He'd taken that one shot, then nothing. And the Howler, what had become of him? Howler had eluded the soldiers trying to kill him. He was sneaking around, trying to join forces with the Shadow Master. Long Shadow went on to suffer one of his fits. It was a big one. So bad, he collapsed, thrashed around, tore his clothing, lost his mask, nearly swallowed his tongue. Floor and face alike became soaked with spittle. How had this guy survived to become one of the most powerful sorcerers in the world if he had seizures whenever he was under stress? Again, though, I could tell no one that he was down, and it was a perfect time to kick him in the head. The protective spells shielding the tower, where Sing and the Daughter of Night had gone to ground, were particularly strong. The Taglians trying to reach them knew who they were, though. And they were dedicated to their commander, and to the huge reward she'd offered for Narayan. Lady said Sing was worth his weight in rubies if he was delivered alive. She never offered anything for her daughter. The sky darkened suddenly. Never have I seen so many crows. It seemed the sun would go out. Chapter 46. I raced to find Croaker and Soulcatcher. Smoke was so far off balance, I actually got close to Lady's mad sister. She was dancing around in a rage, talking to herself in different voices, cursing Lady for having too much initiative, cursing her crows for not getting to the battle and back with information fast enough to suit her.
"It's not time!" she raged. "There's no conjunction yet! This can't happen now!"
I hustled off to find Croaker when smoke began to strain away from the woman. We soared upward, terrifying the crows, leaving a discernible wake through their swarm. I hoped Soulcatcher was not alert enough to catch it. There'd been times when she'd seemed aware of my presence, though that had been on occasions when I was loose from my own place and time, mostly. Croaker was easy to spot. He was headed for camp at a gallop, trailing a comet tail of crows. His giant black stallion seemed almost to fly. I rose higher still, to see if there were developments elsewhere in need of noting. Smoke seemed to enjoy rising up where the eagle soar. We went higher than ever before, until the surface of the earth was so far below that I couldn't make out such trivial details as men and animals, till only the most vast works of man stood out from the snowy background. The Don de Preche gleamed like a row of teeth in the north. In the west, a pile of dark clouds promised more hard weather for later. In the south, the plain of gray stone sparkled as though strewn with newly minted coins. The plain, as a whole, faded away into gray nothingness, yet at the extremity of vision, something loomed within the gray. All Overlook's north face seemed to be on fire. I swooped down there to discover that Howler and Long Shadow had gotten together and launched a counterattack against the troops holding the top of the wall. Then Lady had come to the aid of her people. Every man who could work a bamboo pole was doing so, often apparently not aiming at anything. Amidst all the other lights, the air shimmered with fragments of something that recalled the northern lights we'd seen ages ago when the company was way up at the Barrowland. None of these shards was bigger than a platter. They flew around like a swarm of gnats. The air was filled with a sound like sharp steel in rapid motion. The shimmer slashed everything but Long Shadow's most densely spell-protected stone. Lady was up near the edge of the emergency housing that had been erected for Shadowlander refugees. Her usual gang of worshippers surrounded her, ready to repel any physical attack. She was doing whatever it was that was throwing those blades of light around up there, keeping the defenders under cover, and Howler and Long Shadow too busy to trouble her or any of her soldiers. The blades of light didn't appear to be under Lady's direct command, but orbited a point she did control most of the time. A tower collapsed into the interior of the fortress. A pillar of dust, reflecting colorfully, rose to be carried away by the wind, bringing the storm from the west. The outside of the fortress, once so ivory, was a mess of stains. I figured the housekeeping staff would be real put out. The flying black speck that was the old man was almost back to his headquarters. I knew he would want to see me first. Reluctantly, I left the great show for flesh.
"What the hell is going on?"
One Eye demanded as I let myself down from the wagon. The show must have impressed him because he was all business. He had food and drink waiting. "Croaker's almost here. I'll tell you both." Right on cue, the old man popped over the nearest rise and hurtled toward us. His mount was still in motion when he left his saddle. He grunted as his boots hit the ground.
"Tell me!"
He understood that we were waiting. I told him everything I knew, including the fact that he was sneaking around with his wife's sister when the shitstorm hit. He stared over my shoulder toward Overlook the whole time. His expression was cold, stony. I offered the observation that Lady had in no way exceeded her authority within the general orders of the organization. That cold look turned my way. I had no trouble meeting it. A couple of brushes with Kina can do wonders for the trivial fears of the world. "You got something on your mind, Mergen?"
"You don't tell anybody what's going on. You got to accept it when they go ahead and get on with the job."
I thought smoke was going to roll out of his ears. A skinny, mangy mongrel raced past, and on the dead run, clamped jaws on a startled crow. He got a wing. All the crows in the world descended on him before he could enjoy his dinner.
"A parable,"
One Eye said.
"Observe. Black crows, black dog, the eternal struggle."
"Black philosopher," Croaker grumbled.
"Black company,"
Croaker said. "Let's go have a chat with my esteemed paramour. Where is she, Mergen?" I told him. "Let's go." But he had to stop and pick up his Widowmaker costume, which allowed me time to borrow Ty Day's gray mare and get a head start. Croaker frowned, but didn't ask when he caught up. Ty Day insisted on coming along, even though he had the jog now. He didn't keep up. Neither did I, of course. If Lady and the old man indulged in a headbutting contest, it was over before I got there. Maybe I could take Smoke back to look their meeting over. When I got